Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, what's going on, man? Hey, I just want to say one thing about Kevin Durant and this and that. All I got to say is I heard a caller earlier say about how the Warriors didn't need Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant needed the Warriors. I think that's a lie. Where the Warriors are right now, I don't think they would have got there without Kevin Durant. And personally, I don't think they won a championship without Kevin Durant. So I think the guy needs to get the respect that he's due. I mean, granted, the heart and soul of the Warriors is Draymond Green. I mean, without him, they ain't nowhere. But they need Kevin Durant to win the finals. So I just got to give him that credit.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call, Junior. Listen, the Warriors, we don't know who or what they can do without a guy. We definitely know, in one game, but we definitely know trending to win four games before the other team wins four games, that you would much rather have all of those guys. So I don't know what it is that people have to point out, like you have to have Durant, you have to have Draymond, you have to have Steph, you have to have Klay. Great. I just want to win. I don't really care how they do it. Well, they're not going to, do the gamesmanship of Houston, but there's the time when you need to step up. Kevin Durant was the finals in the last two NBA finals, as we know. He was the MVP, I should say, in the last two NBA finals. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. And I was kind of hoping for Steph to get it last year, but Steph had one game where he wasn't very good. KD was consistent all the way through. KD has carried this team. KD in these playoffs has scored 45 points in a game that the Warriors lost. And the next round, he scored 46 points in a game that the Warriors lost. Those are games the Warriors lost. You just think about what he does defensively, too. He's not one of these guys that just scores. His defense was underrated. And then, honestly, I think you give a lot of credit to the Ron Adams of the world. He really worked with KD on his defense because I think somebody finally got in his ear and said, if you feel like it, you can be an all-time beast on defense. You can be a dog out there, dude. And he dedicated himself to that. But to say we need this guy more than that guy or that guy more than this guy, to me it seems a little bit petty. They're a team. We need all of them, right? Let's go to Bebe in town. What's up, Bebe?
Hey, what's up, man? Rick, nice hearing from you. I was one of the ones I picked the Warriors to win yesterday. And being a betting man, I won some money on it, too, with 6 points that I didn't need. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was good to put down the Houston floppers. I can't stand watching Houston. The only time I watch them is when they play the Warriors. But it's good that we got them. And I just wanted to say, I thought the Splash Brothers would have to come alive to win, which they did. But I didn't think Steph would go zero in the first half. But it was a great game. It was so entertaining and one of the best playoff games I've seen in a long time.
Thank you for the call, Bebe. I appreciate that. I also appreciate you rocking the name Bebe. It's like that movie Frantic with Harrison Ford, Dede. Everyone's looking for Dede, mon ami. Can you imagine? I mean, the vitriol now that Chris Paul is getting on social media, which, as my main man, Shooty Babbitt, says, is 99% evil, and it's true. Could you imagine what Bill Buckner would get if he had that today, or Jackie Smith dropping a touchdown in the Super Bowl for the Cowboys? I mean, some of the all-time chokes. What would happen if this mob mentality of Twitter ganged up on them right now? I know people said, well, last year, now you can't say if Chris Paul was out, you would have won. I still, at the time, I thought that have Chris Paul been healthy, that the Rockets would have won. I thought that deep down. Just because it didn't work out this year has nothing to do with last year. To me, it's two different things. But we don't know. Let's just go with what we know. That's something that Jen likes to do in Danville. How you doing, Jen?
Hey, so I have a couple points I want to make. Yeah, last year with KD being the MVP of the finals, you can't take away the fact that he gets a lot of baskets and he makes a lot of moves because Curry's on the court. And whether Curry or not makes a basket or not or has an off game, no one on that team is doing what they're doing without Steph being on the court and drawing players towards him. He makes so much happen that people don't even realize. Mm-hmm. And then my question for you is, why do you think the Warriors get no respect? I mean, back in Jordan's time, you could breathe on him and a foul would be called. Steph, two-time MVP, Warriors champions, we get no respect. We don't get the calls. They can, you know, Nene can throw McKinney down and PJ can elbow Jarebko in the neck and, you know, no calls. Why do you think that is?
All right. Thank you for the call, Jen. No respect, you mean, from the officiating. I think the officials, I don't think they have an agenda. I'm not the biggest fan of officials, by the way. To me, they're like glorified meter maids. But I respect the fact that they have a tough job to do and that both sides will hate you no matter what. I don't understand the ref, you suck chant. I don't think that helps the home team when people chant that. I never chant ref, you suck because I'm trying to get the next call, obviously. But the Warriors, as much as we love them, they are one of the top whining teams of all time. Draymond, even Iguodala, Cousins, KD, especially Draymond. And Draymond knows, you know, the guy's not going to change his mind. He'll follow him, he'll tee him up, he'll still follow him, he'll still be yakking at him. I think subconsciously that wears on these refs. And so if it's a 50-50 play and he blows the whistle and then both players turn to look, I think subconsciously or even sometimes consciously, you point at a guy wearing a Warriors jersey. Just because you're so sick of the moaning and groaning. Oh, they never have committed a foul. The one guy, you know what, whenever there's a foul on him, on Livingston, outside of one very famous time, but for the most part, he just puts his hand up. He's like, yeah, that's on me. You got me. And there was actually, I'll give Dre credit. There was one play last night where he got called for a foul, and he was like, oh, whatever. And I thought it was kind of ticky-tack. I thought it was kind of a 50-50 play. And I thought, wow, is this a new Draymond? I don't know. We need him on the court. I say we as Warrior fans. And I don't know about, you know, listen, Jordan was Jordan, and it was a different time. It was a little bit rougher. I don't think it's as much like it is in Major League Baseball, where if you're a veteran, it's a ball. And if you're a rookie, it's a strike. And we know that. I mean, Wade Boggs, anything he spat upon was automatically a ball because Wade Boggs took it. So couldn't have been a strike, right? But then you call up Dick Hertz from Moose Jaw, and he takes one a little bit on the outside. Oh, that's in the black. Let's ring him up because he's a rookie. Take the bat off your shoulder. You're in the big. Swing the lumber. Grip it and rip it, kid. So in the NBA, I don't know if that's as much, but the Rockets whine as well. It's, I don't know, it gets a little old. It's kind of part and parcel, but to me, I would suppose you whine about calls because you're trying to get the guy to not call it on you next time, and I think it has the opposite effect. I think you need to do reverse psychology sometimes. I think you have to say, you got me, that was a really good call. I'm actually surprised you saw that because when I reached, it looked like it was all ball, but I actually did scrape his elbow as I put my hand in. That's a good call, ref. You think, what if somebody tried that? You could try that and then say, you know what? That guy seems like he gave me a compliment. I won't call him for a foul. I don't think it works either other way. 949, area code, which I think is Neptune. Every team thinks the refs are screwing them. Yes, as I said, why would anyone want that thankless job? I have no idea. But what I do know, how's that for a segue there, kids? Matt Barros, we're going to take a little break from the hoop. We'll get back to it, but he'll tell us what's going on down in Santa Clara with the Niners. And we'll do that next. I'm Rick Tittle, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game. Here's Rick Tittle.
Thank you for that. Welcome back to 95.7 The Game. Great to have you with us. I'll take you from Saturday evening into Saturday night. I'll be here until 9 o'clock. Anthony Slater at 7:20, of course, talking Warriors. He's with The Athletic. Bob Nightingale, great national baseball writer for USA Today. We'll check on the local nines. That'll be at 8:20 p.m. And it's time to talk a little Niners here as well. You can get in at any point, though, toll-free at 888-957-9570. Remember, I cover every sport if you'd like. Football, basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, golf, tennis, auto racing, boxing, Olympics, Quidditch, all about chess, checkers, rugby, cricket, that type of stuff. 888-957-9570. And the Chilton Auto Body text line is 95795. Let's just take one quick look here for the people who did throw in a text. And 707 says the Rockets take the cake for moaning about fouls. Well, as I said, the Warriors definitely whine, and the Rockets were whining as well. All right, it's always great to talk a little football with our guest, Matt Barrows, who's been covering the 49ers for a long time. He is with The Athletic. And we had a little rookie mini camp, and it's I always go to the Raiders rookie mini camp, and depending on the coach, you never know how much you're going to see. John Gruden let us watch him screw around for about a half hour, but every once in a while, you'll see a little glimpse of this or a glimmer of that. Who stuck out to you, Matt?
Well, I was watching Nick Bosa the whole time, just because you know, when you got another number two overall pick on your team, you look at him, and he hadn't even practiced since mid-September. So this was his first practice in a while, and you know, obviously it's against a lot of undrafted guys, and you know, it's not full pads, it's not full contact, but you know, my takeaway was that, you know, he looked the part. I mean, he looked like an NFL defensive end. They would do all these drills, and they would do them where he's basically doing it at the same time as another defensive player. Like, they'll go through a cone drill, but it'll be two at a time. And he was quick. I mean, he was faster than the guy next to him for sure, and a little bit faster than I expected from him. Like I said, he looked the part. It was, you know, certainly just a very, very small glimmer of the guy, but I felt like it was a good start for him.
Very good. Now, anyone else that you saw? Because we're sort of waiting. To me, the real mystery here is the Swiss Army knife in Jalen Hurd. I mean, he could be kind of a Randall Cobb guy. He ran a little tailback for Tennessee. He could put on some weight and be a tight end. I don't see that happening, but who knows? So what do you think about him? Because I'm sure Shanahan has these dreams at night, these puppy dog tails and sugar plum fairies, X's and O's about all the ways you can use that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to me, he's the most intriguing of all eight of those picks, or all six of those picks. He looked good. I mean, again, just a very short, small glimpse of the guy. But he was hurt throughout all of the offseason. So all of the Senior Bowl he wasn't able to participate in. He didn't take part in any of the combine stuff. And when he finally did the pro day over at Baylor, he ran something like a 4.66. But that's not who he is. I think he's significantly faster than that. He looked it the other day, and he was just coming back. He had a meniscus surgery in early January, so it's not a serious knee injury, but like I said, something that kept him out for 3 or 4 months. You know, he's going to be very interesting because Kyle Shanahan likes, above all else, well, the first thing he likes is toughness. The second thing he likes is versatility. And then the third thing he likes when it comes to wide receivers is guys who can separate. And Jalen Hurd can do that. I mean, he's a big guy, almost 6'5". He's almost 230 pounds, but his short area quickness is really good. And, you know, I expect if we see him this year, we're going to see him out of the slot. That's where he played maybe 85% of his snaps at Baylor. He's sort of a natural there, and it would be natural if his sort of evolution happens the way that Shanahan says it might, which is that he eventually becomes like an H-back, tight end type, sort of a matchup nightmare for the other team. If the other team, you know, has a small defense, if they have a nickel defense out there, they'll be able to run the ball, the 49ers. If they try to match a linebacker on him, they'll throw the ball to him. So it's really sort of a chess piece, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I think just Kyle Shanahan salivates about this type of guy. Kyle Juszczyk is this type of guy. Jerick McKinnon is this type of guy. George Kittle is that type of guy. And now he's got one in Jalen Hurd. And it's going to be really interesting to see, A, you know, how he uses them, and B, whether he gets a lot of use this year. I think Shanahan wants to sort of temper the expectations and not sort of add to the hype train. But, boy, I mean, he right off the bat, he could be their best or most dangerous weapon out of the slot from week one on.
You know, it's funny. After Game 7, the Sharks and the Avalanche, I went down to the dressing room, and when you go down there, off to the side are the family and friends, the wags, the wives and girlfriends and things, and I saw a whole bunch of these huge dudes being very raucous, screaming and yelling, and I thought, who brought these bruisers? And then I saw McGlinchey, Staley, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's the O-line. So all I could think of is, well, these are little bonding things, like going bowling or whatever. They seem like they're bonding, and with that being said, Anthony Davis, not the unibrow, but the former Rutgers lineman after, what, 4 years out of the game, is he going to join this merry band of O-linemen, or is this kind of a pipe dream?
There may have been some beer involved in that bonding over at the Shark Tank. That's just my guess. I really don't know about Anthony Davis. The NFL first has to reinstate him, and if the 49ers took him in, they'd be risking a third spurning by him. I mean, he's abandoned them two times already. You know, do they take a chance on a third time? I'm not sure. The last time it seemed very promising. I was just going back and rereading some of the old stories. I think it was 2016, and Anthony Davis rejoined the team after retiring, and this is when they had Trent Brown, and so Trent Brown had that right tackle spot all sealed up, and so the only opening for Anthony Davis was to play guard, and he played it well. I mean, he's a big guy that can move, and that's what you want at offensive line. And so he basically won the starting right guard spot and then retired. I think he may have had another injury, another concussion, but it prompted him to retire fairly quickly after he unretired. So I hope that the 49ers go back and sort of look at that history before making a decision there. But, you know, the bottom line is that he's a talented guy. I think he's still only 29 years old. You know, has a history of sort of fading away when things get a little rough for him.
Yeah, and he's free to do whatever he wants. But, yes, he has shown that he's not fully committed like a lot of other guys are. And so we'll see what happens with AD. A couple more questions from Matt Barros of The Athletic about the 49ers. There was a report in the last few weeks that said that there was a fractious situation in the front office between GM and head coach, and that maybe Kyle was doing scouting he didn't want to do, and this is how they ended up drafting a punter in the fourth round. And it's just, I don't know. Listen, there's always going to be disagreements. These are grown-ups who work together, and there's a high-pressure situation, and they haven't won as a group so far. What did you think about the report that there was trouble in quasi-paradise?
Yeah, I mean, the two things that sort of went to support that thesis were that Kyle Shanahan doesn't like doing scouting, and B, he wants to pick his own, you know, hand-picked GM for the job. Well, he's already got that in John Lynch. I mean, John Lynch will pick whoever Shanahan wants. I mean, that's the way you want that relationship to be, and that's what it is. So I don't see how it would improve from that point of view. And then the other part of it is that, you know, it's my sense that Kyle Shanahan really likes the scouting aspect of it. I mean, certainly every offensive you know, skill position player that they've either drafted or brought in through free agency is a guy that Cal Shanahan has watched copiously on a film of, and has sort of handpicked. So neither of those two, supports for that thesis seem to fit. I mean, has everything gone smoothly? No, it hasn't. I mean, 2017 was I don't want to say a disaster, but very few things went right that year, both draft-wise and free agency-wise. I mean, the best free agents that they brought in were the fullback, Kyle Juszczyk, and the kicker, Robbie Gould, and the kicker is going to hold out this year, or at least he's threatened to. So that sort of tells you everything you need to know about how they got off, on the wrong foot back in 2017. And a lot of the things that they did this year in the offseason were basically redos for 2017. So it certainly hasn't gone smoothly, but I don't see a lot of finger-pointing, and I certainly don't see a lot of, hurt feelings or guys not getting along together when you watch those two. They're as close a GM coach pairing as I've seen, and I've been covering this team since 2003.
Do you really think we're going to have a Le'Veon Gould?
No, I don't think so, and I don't think it would be wise for Robbie Gould to do that at this point in his career. The 49ers are not going to use the franchise tag 2 years in a row on a kicker. So he's going to be an unrestricted free agent in March of 2020. But in order to, reap the rewards that he thinks that he's due, he needs to have another, good season. He needs to have another 2018-like year. And he's not going to have that if there's an extended holdout and he comes in, they've got a new holder. And Mitch Wisnowski, the punter that they drafted, he's got to get a little bit of chemistry with him. I see this thing going, basically to the limit. But if there's one guy that the 49ers are okay holding out the entire offseason, it's probably the veteran kicker that they know is, practicing his butt off in the Chicago area during this time that he's holding out.
It's funny because the Utes had the best kicker and the best punter, but we know about Wisnowski is, and he did win the Ray Guy Award. He's a fantastic punter, but it's the Aussie style, and it not so much hang time as a lot of bouncing. Now you think about the hands as a holder as well. Gone are the days of hang time and coffin corner and all that. How do you think special teams wise they plan to use Wisnowski? Just let him run a couple of steps to his right and do what he did at Utah, or are they going to make him fit into that more NFL mold?
Oh, I think it'll be the latter. I think they're going to make him fit into the NFL mold. I think that they love the fact that he's got a lot of tricks in his bag, a lot of bags in his club. And Wisnowski was explaining the other day that, in Australia, if you're an athlete and you're playing Aussie rules football or rugby or either of those sports, you're doing a lot of kicking from the get-go. I mean, those sports require that of all the players. You have to be multi-talented, whereas in the U.S., if you're a great athlete and you play football, you're probably going to be, a running back or a quarterback or a wide receiver. And, we sort of dismiss the kicker and the punter. We think that those are sort of quasi positions. They're not real football positions. In Australia, they are. So guys, grow up, if you're playing that, from youth onward, you're doing a lot of kicking. You're doing a lot of kicking on the run, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that they're very confident in him. He's 27 years old. He's not a kid. He's done other things in life. He's really an interesting guy. And it's very interesting to see these Australians have a lot of success in the U.S. And I think it has to do with what I just described. I mean, it's a factor of athletes having, been part of the kicking game from, age 10 on up or whatever it is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you think about the population of Australia, which is less than 1%, and then they win like 30% of all the Olympic medals. I mean, they're a very sporty lot, to say the least. I want to ask you just a quick question about Solomon Thomas, because you know, it's hard to feel sorry for a young, healthy millionaire, but yet on the other hand, you know, being the third overall pick, could you say this year with Bosa and Ford on one end and, of course, Buckner in there, things are going to get funneled at Thomas and that's going to benefit him because now he's really going to step up? Or do you think because of that, now he's really going to be exposed? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing, the first challenge for him is snaps. I mean, you mentioned Bosa and Dee Ford on the ends, and you've got Buckner in the middle, and you also have Eric Armstead, and you also have DJ Jones, the starting nose tackle. Snaps were hard for Solomon Thomas to come by last year, and they've added two, you know, surefire defensive ends, edge players in the off season. So I can only imagine if everybody's healthy, and with Eric Armstead, that's always a big question mark. But if everyone's healthy, I think, you know, his snaps are going to be interesting to watch first of all. And I think most of them are going to come on the inside, and they should mostly come in passing situations, which, you know, presumably is where he's going to excel. I saw him at the Stanford Pro Day, and he's wearing street clothes, and he's just kind of hanging out and, you know, offering support for the Stanford players that were going through the drills. I thought that he looked better than he did last year. He looked a little bit bigger, a little bit more fit, a little bit more confident, et cetera, et cetera. Last year at this time, he was reeling from his sister's suicide, and that's going to put any of us, you know, on the floor. I mean, I don't see how anybody can have been expected to perform at any job whatsoever, much less NFL defensive tackle, after you know, experiencing what he did last year. So I think he's going to bounce back. I think his snap count is going to be very interesting to monitor throughout the year, and sort of carving out a role for himself is a big deal. And usually when you're the number three pick in the draft, you don't have to worry about that. That's sort of handed to you. For Solomon Thomas, it won't be this year. He's got to earn it.
Finally, you look at the division, and listen, if a healthy Garoppolo and they go, you know, 4-12, that's not going to get it done. But you look at Seattle, who just gave Russell all that money. You look at the Rams, of course, who are in the Super Bowl. And then Arizona beat they were the worst team in football, but they beat the Niners twice. Now they have Kyler Murray. We'll see if they get better or not. But just getting out of that division, I mean, there's six games right there. Do you expect the Niners to have a winning record? Because I think, even though this is not what you play for, but 8-8 would be a pretty good start.
Yeah, 8-8 would be two wins more than they had in 2017, and four more than last year. So you could argue that that's progress. You know, where those eight wins come, I think that'll sort of dictate the perception of it a little bit. But you know, when you've been a bad team as long as the 49ers, this league is geared for you to rise to the surface at some point, and the 49ers just haven't risen since 2013. And you know, at some point, people are going to start getting impatient about this whole thing. And I thought that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch did a great job of setting expectations when they came in 2017, and letting everybody know that this is going to be a thorough rebuild, a ground up rebuild. But now we're in year three, and they've had three top 10 picks, and they've had scads of salary cap space to spend. And like I said earlier, they didn't do a good job the first year. They did better last year, and they seem to be learning on the fly. But you know, that's sort of the balance that we're in. Can you sort of learn the things that you don't know, i.e. Lynch and Shanahan, two guys who are doing their jobs for the first time, Robert Saleh too, and still make up enough ground that you need to sort of satisfy, the expectations. So I think 8-8 is definitely realistic. I think less than that, if it's another 6-win season, if it's 6-5-4, then we have to start thinking about some bigger changes than we've seen these last 2 years.
Yeah, and I think it's easier to find a GM than a head coach that you like. So if somebody had to go, I think it might be the kid from Stanford. We'll see. We've been speaking with Matt Barrows. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at Matt Barrows, B-A-R-R-O-W-S, and, of course, read him in The Athletic. Matt, great stuff, great insights, as always. We thank you for your time, and we look forward to having you on again real soon.
All right, anytime. Talk to you soon.
All right, good stuff, and a little bit of football talk here. We'll get back into the Warriors here in about 5 minutes. Rick Tittle with you here at 95.7 The Game, 888-957-9570 to chime in, 888-957-9570. Chilton Autobody text line, 95795. You know, I saw an article, was it yesterday, that Sean McVay, the offensive genius, so to speak, and a great coach for the Los Angeles Rams, he got to the Super Bowl, and Bill Belichick's defense held that fantastic offense to a field goal. And McVay, who even at the time, at the Super Bowl, he explained, you know, he was a stand-up guy. He said, I got out, coach, blah, blah, blah. But he did say in an article I saw yesterday that he had over-prepared for the Super Bowl with that extra week. And he said he watched every single Patriots game. It wasn't like a normal week. And it's funny, if you ignore history, you're doomed to repeat it. I think about being over-prepared. Dick Vermeil in Super Bowl 15, which I went to. The Super Bowl is always my age, so I was 15 at Super Bowl 15. This is why we have Super Bowl 97 this year. But it was a very interesting day in New Orleans. January 25th, 1981, my dad had taken my older brother to Super Bowl 11 in Pasadena. I was 11, my little brother was 10, and my dad said, if the Raiders ever go again, I'll take you two guys. Well, 4 years later, they went, and so my dad, great guy, true to his word, took me and we were season ticket holders, took my little brother and I to New Orleans. It's still, to this day, the greatest road trip for a sporting event of my life. And I've been lucky enough to go to World Cups and just about everything else. Been very privileged that way, which I appreciate. But anyway, my dad, great guy. That being said, we got to the stadium very early. It was actually the same day that Reagan was being inaugurated and that the hostages were being released. Coincidence? After 444 days of captivity. And I remember the cab driver told us on the way to the Superdome, they're flying the hostages straight to the Superdome, which, of course, was a dumb rumor. I think they went to, like, Rammstein Air Base or in Wiesbaden, somewhere in Germany. They went to a hospital to get checked out. He said, yeah, kickoff's delayed 2 hours. It wasn't. I was all excited to go to a place that actually had replay boards inside. They turned them off and raised them. They were afraid Ray Guy was going to kick the ball into him. Ray Guy probably had the worst game of his life. It didn't matter. The Raiders won. But my point is, and we all wore these little gold ribbons like you put on a Christmas present for the hostages. The Superdome had a big gold ribbon on it for the hostages. And we got there basically the minute they would let you in. And they let you in about 3 hours before the game. But we were getting on a plane after the game, so we had nothing else to do. We had already done the French Quarter and beignets and Jackson Square and all that. So I'll never forget, even as a 15-year-old who played high school football, I walked in and I saw Eagles in full uniforms warming up, running patterns. And I thought, you got to be freaking kidding me. Because I knew the Raiders were just getting in from drinking. And the Eagles were already there and warming up. And I remember I told my dad, I said, Vermeil is a nervous wreck. And he was already famous for crying. Look, he's a great coach, Bay Area roots, all that. But Cardinal Newman, speaking of Cardinal Newman, Jerry Robinson, first round pick out of UCLA, he was on that team. And I asked him, I did a couple shows with him years later. I go, were you guys wound as tight as piano wire? And he said, we were. They over-prepared. When you're in full uniform running up and down the field 3 hours before the game, something's wrong. And then Rod Martin, three interceptions. Can you imagine that? You're an outside linebacker. Do you have three interceptions in your career? He had three in one game, and he wasn't the Super Bowl MVP. It's ridiculous. I love Plunkett, who got it. But all I thought of was McVay is just saying, I did a Dick Vermeil. I overprepared, and it's hard not to. What are you supposed to do? I think I'm going to play Fallout or maybe Battlefield 4, or let's binge watch something on Netflix. Well, you got the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. Of course you're going to watch too much. So there's a fine line between preparing and overpreparing, and McVay said he overprepared. All right, some basketball talk on the other side. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back, 95.7.
Now back to 95.7 The Game. Here's Rick Tittle.
I always wait for the vocals to start, and then I realize it's just a music bed. Some old high school funk right here. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you. Great to have you with us on a Saturday night. Can we say night? Pretty much now. Take you until 9 o'clock. Our next guest will be Anthony Slater in a half hour, 7:20. He is covering the Warriors with The Athletic, as we know. We'll talk a little baseball at 8:20 with Bob Nightingale with USA Today. This segment is all about y'alls and your calls. Get in the queue. We'll talk to you as we talk about the Warriors who move on to the Final Four in the NBA, if you like, the Western Finals yet again as they await either the Denver Nuggets or the Portland Trailblazers. Do they still say Trailblazers? Do they still say Knickerbockers? 888-957-9570. Questions, comments, or concerns? 888-957-9570. Chilton Autobody text line 95795. Let's get a little sound here. After the game, the head coach of the Rockets was already knowing that this one was going to stay around for a while.
Well, this one's going to leave a mark. This is not something you just get over with. You know, I'm definitely not going to get over it in this press conference or tomorrow or the next day, but this one hurts. We didn't play our best, and to beat these guys, you got to play your best. It's almost like in a boxing match, you got to knock the champion out, and we didn't knock him out.
Of course, that's D'Antoni with the Houston Rockets. You know, it's funny. His accent is so weird. It's almost like Al Davis's, which is what did Osler call it? Like half Brooklyn. Actually, when I was going to Coney Island in December, I went past his high school, Rasmus High School, where Barbara Streisand and Michael Rapaport, all these different people went to high school. I went by Al Davis's high school, but it's half Southern and half Jersey.
I feel the greatness of the Raiders has always been in the city of Oakland. When I see the fellas and I feel the love to be a Raider. You want to be a Raider. Just win, baby.
That's my Al Davis.
Just win, baby.
Tip your waitresses. I'll be here all week. Draymond Green. Man, just a guy who gives 100%, sometimes 110%. That 10% gets him teed up. But this is what Dre said after the game.
This one feels good because just all the circumstances that go into it. Like I said, a team that's said for years, we're built to beat them. Us. Then Kevin goes down and everyone not give us a chance. I hear we was the biggest underdog in the Steve Kerr era or something like that. Like, you know, you take all those things into account. This one feels amazing. If I said it otherwise, I'd be sitting here lying to you. Felt good. But we got a lot more work to do.
They do have a lot more work to do. And that's the thing. You don't see champagne showers. And when you're a champion, you know you're on to the next thing. On to the next one. On to the next one. What did Dave Chappelle say that if you... if you're trying to sign up for an Airbnb and you put your name in as Draymond Green, Airbnb will break. And then Draymond said, that's messed up. Chappelle, I gave my son that name. Oh, it's all jokes. Let's go to Patrick out in the military cemeteries of Colma. What's up, Patrick?
Hey, how you doing, Rick, man? I'm the original graveyard gangster. I just want to say this one thing. You see, class is something that you either have or you don't have. Just because you have money don't mean you have class. And Chris Paul is a perfect example of that. If that's true what he did to Steph Curry by, you know, not even letting him use half the court, that's classless. And you see what happened to him. You grin when you win. You sing the blues when you lose. They are classic, classless organization. And we first class here in the Bay Area. And you know that.
All right, thanks for the call, Patrick. I appreciate it. 888-957-9570. Patrick calling from the crypt. Now, Steve Kerr, after the game, who's always good for a quote or two. Let's hope this one doesn't have the F word.
We were actually talking about it in there. You know, it's one of the most satisfying victories we've had during this run. We've been blessed to have all this talent and competitiveness, and these guys are just amazing. So they've won a lot of big games, but this is definitely one of the most satisfying we've had.
As I was saying before, yes, he did not quote Jurgen Klopp in that one. Not saying these, we've been very lucky, very fortunate as Warrior fans that these playoff wins, sometimes they blur together. Remember that series against New Orleans where blah, blah, did blah, blah? Yes, you do? Kinda. Remember against the Nuggets? Okay. We'll remember this one, for sure. We will remember this one. Let's go to Rich in Freakmont. What's up in the 510, man?
Hey, Tittle. Hey, listen, this is really cool. I finally get to talk to you because you can call me other times. I talk to other DJs, but I've never had a chance to talk to you. So this is cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I just wanted to point out the fact that, I mean, it was nice to be able to see the Warriors win, but it was even nicer to see them the way they did it. It's like I had been yelling at every game I watched, yelling, hoping that Kerr would hear me and say, look, you need to go back to the mantra. The mantra is strength in numbers. Play the bench, okay? Because why? Because Mike D'Antoni's defense was set up to cover KD. And now KD's gone, throw something else at him. He won't be ready for it. And sure enough, they do that, they get the W. That's all I got.
All right, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. That's Rich out there in Fremont. And at first he said, I wanted them to go with the Mothra. He said mantra. I got it the second time. Yeah, strength in numbers. And you know what's funny about that? A lot of those T-shirts, they're just printed up willy-nilly. You know, I don't know. Maybe they are. Maybe they don't. I don't know if the Warriors are us. What would you like your catchphrase to be? We believe. Okay, how about this year? Strength in numbers. Did you see the Rockets they were wearing, all the fans were wearing Red Nation? That, I don't know, and that, I don't know how PC that was. I don't know if you kind of thought the same thing. I don't really want to go there. That Red Nation, that doesn't really work. All right, how about Steph Curry? Let's hear from Steph, because remember, he had a tale of two halves for sure.
Our story is crazy. It's been like that for the last 5 years, and it's going to continue to be till it's over. So try to stay even keel. Like after game three, hearing the chatter, hearing how poorly I was playing, this and that. A night like tonight doesn't happen without belief in myself, one, understanding my purpose, you know, being able to play in these type of games, and the people I have around me pouring some positivity and you know, great energy into me and keeping my perspective straight on. It's just basketball. It's a game I've played since I was 2 years old, so take the good with the bad and you just play and have fun doing what you get to do.
It was the tale of two cities, a tale of two halves, except he flipped it. It was the worst of times, it was the best of times. It was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness. It was the epic of belief, it was the epic of incredulity. It was the season of light, it was the season of darkness, it was the spring of hope, it was the winter of despair. And in the end, they won. Ha ha. All right, now, there's another Splash Brother as well. Oh yeah, him. That guy, Mr. Max Contract. Let's not forget Clay Cephas.
Like Steve Kerr said, we didn't have the ultimate luxury tonight, a man who can just go out there and get you 40 on a win. So we had to play a little more diligent with the ball. We had to be more crisp with our passes, and the room for error was a lot less compared to when Kevin's out there. And I'm happy we won so we can get some rest and get him healthy, because if we're going to get this three-peat, we desperately need him back. You know, he's our best player, so we dearly miss him, and we'll hold it down while he's out, but it's not the same without him. Far from it.
No doubt about it. Sage words from Clay Thompson. The thing is, and Rich, who just called, is so right. It's the way that they won it, because a lot of people were saying, oh, you know, without KD, you know, look what happened the last time you didn't have KD. You choked away. You were the best team in the history of the regular season with 73 wins, and then you lost three in a row, and ha-ha, and you need KD or you can't win with them. Listen, you just heard from Clay. You heard from everyone. It would be ridiculous to say that they don't need KD. Of course they need KD for a series. They need KD. Now, Do they have no chance without KD? I don't even want to think about it. But to beat Houston on their court, and I sometimes can't help but think about this psyche, the mental aspect of knowing that Durant is out for the rest of the series, and you had lost three other times to the Warriors in the playoffs in the recent, what, last four. And so here it is, the fifth year. It's your fourth time facing the Warriors. And you finally got what you wanted. You got what you gave them the year before, which was Paul out for 6 and 7. And, of course, the Rockets were up. But you got what you wanted. No Kevin Durant. And you have them in Houston. Finally, we will be able to get past Golden State. And then we'll take our chances in the West with Portland or Denver, and be it Milwaukee, whomever, in the playoffs, Philadelphia, Toronto, it doesn't matter. We will be ready. We will be ready. And wait, you didn't win. What happened? What in the hell happened to the Rockets? Now, do you say it's a choke job, or do you say that the Warriors stepped up? Well, when Steph Curry scores no points in the first half, and Kevin Durant is not playing, and it's tied at halftime, that is a complete Houston choke. In the second half, it is the Warriors rising up. By the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Rick Tittle with you for another 2 hours. So you basically had no Steph and no KD in the first half, and you let them leave to the locker room at halftime on your court tied. That is a choke. And then the Warriors took advantage of it, and they got back to their old selves, especially with Steph, 33 in the second half, 23 in the fourth. Let's go to Tish out in Hercules. What's up, Tish?
Hi, Rick. I wanted to comment about what the last, one of the last callers said about using the bench. I think it was brilliant to do that because they probably hadn't studied any tape on our bench, so they had no idea what to do with our bench. But the other thing I wanted to mention is whenever someone says we don't need KD, I remind them that our core four went out to the Hamptons and asked KD to join them, which is why it's the Hamptons five, which is why, irrespective of what people say, they felt they needed KD. And I'm so pleased that they showed so much love to KD and that he showed he had his eyes on them with his little Instagram post. So it's all positive right now.
All right. Hey, Tish. And as always, I appreciate you taking the time to call. That's Tish. Tish out there, either Refugio Valley Road, maybe on the other side of the freeway, and Hercules there out by the Powder Keg. Brought to you by the Powder Keg. Now, just throwing out a random restaurant that I like out there in Hercules. 888-957-9570. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. 925 says, KD is a beast, but to say we need him is to win is going against the numbers that say we don't. How am I wrong? Numbers don't lie. Well, you can take your numbers and you can throw them out the window on the freeway. There are lies, there are damn lies, and then there are something called statistics. You're telling me they don't need KD? I hope you don't get what you wish for, because the Warriors are not winning a title without KD. I'm sorry. They might win the West. They do not win a title without KD. I don't care what your calculator tells you, 925. Let's go to my main man, Big Moose in San Jose. What's up, Moose Juice?
Hey, Tittle. So first thing I got to say is the people saying that we don't need KD, I mean, I just get that off the air. People, stop. Get that out of your mind. You don't say you don't need the best player in the world on your team. Everybody wants him. Everybody essentially needs him. My main point I wanted to make, though, I'm probably the biggest Chris Paul hater. Harden, I respect how good he is. I don't necessarily respect his actual game, how he goes about it. But Chris Paul, I cannot stand the guy. But I got to back him and Harden and just say, yes, they lost the game. But I personally don't think they actually choked. I think the Warriors just really beat them. And Chris Paul even said it after the game. He said, you know what? We said we're going to make their other guys beat us. And they sure did it. Andre Iguodala with 5 threes, Livingston with 11 points, Looney with 14 points. Again, I can't stand those guys, but for this one game, I can't say that they actually deflated and choked. I think they just straight up got beat by the better team.
All right. Thank you, Moose. I appreciate that. You know, one thing I find refreshing.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.